Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Gardening Naturally on a lovely Saturday morning. The sun is shining. It's starting to warm up, folks, but there's a bit of a breeze out there. Good time to run out there and get your gardening in so that this afternoon you can stay out of the worst of the sun. Going to be warm, going to be humid. It's going to be Texas. This is what we expect at this time of the year. So far, we've had a pretty good gardening season. Unfortunately, last week I gave a discussion. We talked about squash vine borers being a pain. And they've probably already been through our area. May is the time where you will see their first burst. And you'll see a second burst of those around August. They really just got the year covered for us, don't they? Well, yesterday, out picking tomatoes, having a good crop of tomatoes this year. My dryer is running every other day, keeping the tomatoes, drying out the tomatoes so I can store them. Ran into leaf-footed bugs. Yeah, those nasty little buggers are out right now. So what do you do about leaf-footed bugs? Well, let's talk about what they are first. If you look at a leaf-footed bug, they tend to be darker colored, dark gray to almost a black. Many of the leaf-footed bugs that we see on our tomatoes have a white band, like they're wearing a white belt across them. They're called leaf-footed bugs because if you look at their back legs, they're big and broad, kind of Popeye-armed. They are a stinging insect. By that, I mean that's how they're not a chewer on a leaf or chewer on the plant. They poke their proboscis into the tomatoes or other fruits and suck out juices. We get them on peaches. We get them everywhere. They are not specific to tomatoes. They're ubiquitous throughout your yard. If you had no garden, you would still have leaf-footed bugs. So it's not something that you can simply go, well, I'm going to quit growing plant X and I won't have this pest. Not true. Leaf-footed bugs in the cool of the morning, not this week, we're pretty warm this week, are very slow moving. It's a lot easier to deal with them and get a handle on them. Some of the easiest ways to manage leaf-footed bugs is to get yourself a big cup or a very small bucket. Fill it halfway up with water, just plain water. Put a squirt of liquid soap in there, just a little bit. You can shake it up if you want and make it a layer of bubbles. Doesn't matter. What we're doing is the soap will make it so that the surface tension of water is so weak that the bugs can't walk on the water. You see a bug do that, right? They don't drown. Well, putting the soapy water in there and they can't stand on the water and they're going to fall in and they're going to drown. Take your cup or small bucket or whatever you're using, walk through your tomatoes, hold the cup near one and knock the bug into the cup. Now, it's really important to understand. I say about doing this early in the morning because the bugs need the temperature of the day to warm up to really give them the ability to move and fly well. So if I'm out there early, they're not real active. They're not going to take off on me. They're not going to fly away. And it's easier to knock them into the cup. And you do this every day that you have time to do it for. And you will reduce the population and the amount of damage to your fruits and vegetables. And you can get ahead of the bug. The earlier you start, the better off you'll be. That is the most organic, non-invasive way, non-chemical way to control the leaf-footed bugs. Stepping up from there, you may use diatomaceous earth and dust it on your plants. It is an effective deterrent. Diatomaceous earth is this very, very, very fine particle that has sharp edges on it. When you dust it on the plant, it feels drying to your skin. But to the insect, it gets in their joints, hard-shelled insects, bugs that go crunch. It gets in their joints, and when it does so, it tends to poke holes through their exoskeleton. That's a hard shell that holds everything into the bug. When that happens, the bug can desiccate. It loses the ability to retain water in it. And it desiccates and it dies, then ta-da, that's a kill. Diatomaceous earth is inexpensive, easy to come by. Any local independent nursery is going to have it. It's very easy to use. It has one drawback. If I dust a plant with diatomaceous earth, and when I say dust a plant, we're talking about if you're dusting a cake pan with flour. You sprinkle the flour in there, you shake it around, you dump out the extra, and you have this very, very, very fine coat of flour in there. You're going to do the same thing on your plants. Very, very fine coat. It's not going to appear to be much, but it's going to be sufficient. The bugs walk through it, it gets in them, it cuts holes in them, they desiccate, they die. Bad news in this equation. The more humid the environment, the slower that the insect will desiccate. So if it's hot and dry, it works rather quickly. If it's hot and humid, not quite so fast. So this is not a knockdown immediate kill any way you look at it, but it is a great safe deterrent. It will keep those bugs at bay. And let's talk about the bug in the first place. They poke a hole in the tomato and they suck out some juice. They create this little hard spot scar on the tomato. That means the tomato can still be harvested and you can just cut that spot out and you still have a tomato to eat. They're annoying. They're a pain. They blemish the tomatoes. If you're selling them, gets to be a pain in the backside. But those two methods are usually the easiest way to manage them. There are some more, but let's go to the phone first. This is Candy. Good morning, Candy. What can I help you with?
Oh, hi. Yes, we've heard you talk about it before, cover crop using black-eyed peas to build nitrogen in the soil. And I think my husband and I have two different questions about that, because I know that you said before that that you don't till the plants under. You leave it for the roots to stay in there at a certain flowering stage. But is that for when you're wanting to plant something in there after you've done that to the black-eyed peas to give it nitrogen to the plants that you're growing?
Yes, here's the deal. Black-eyed peas can take nitrogen from the air, and with the help of this little bacteria that rides on the roots, they're buddies, they rent space to each other, takes that nitrogen, stores it in a form the plant can use. It doesn't share that with anybody till it dies. So you need to kill the plant to get it to put that nitrogen back in the soil where the next crop can use it. What we generally talk about is you want to cut that into the soil. And that can be done with a hoe. If we had a big farm, we may disc it, we may harrow it. But you turn that plant into the soil so that you kill it about 2 weeks before you start another crop in that same place. That two-week window gets the process started and gets it to start releasing that nitrogen.
Now, there's a certain flowering stage that you do that with the black-eyed peas, right?
Not with black-eyed peas so much, but with clover, with vetch, with buckwheat. Those plants, you go by the flowering stage. Black-eyed peas generally produce the same amount of nitrogen all season long. So there's no real benefit doing it early or late. With the black-eyed peas, you're still going to get the same crop. You're still going to get the same advantage. So timing is less of an issue with black-eyed peas. 2 weeks
so you
before
could
you're
even
ready to
get
put
the
a new crop
black-eyed
in.
Black-eyed peas and then turn them under?
Sure.
Okay. And then,
so long as they,
so you mentioned before, though, something about just cutting the black-eyed peas off at the top of the ground and leaving the roots in the ground.
Yeah, you have to leave the roots in the ground. That's where the nitrogen is. So if you wanted to, you could go along and simply cut the stalk down, leave the roots there, and all the green stuff on top, you can put it in your compost pile or you can leave it on the ground as a mulch. Candy, sorry, we see we dropped you there. We're up against a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's go to the phone, especially this morning, because this is Mary. And Mary, you got an announcement for us, don't you?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, good. Yes, I'm from Austin Organic Gardeners, and this month, June, is normally our month where we have an ice cream social, but we're doing it online this year because we can't meet in person at Zilker. And we're having a speaker from the Indian Plant Gardeners of Austin named Ritu Sharma. And she's going to give us an online backyard tour, virtual tour of her garden in East Austin, her showing Indian plants.
Outstanding. And, you know, that's one of the things about Austin. We live so much in the, this is what we're so used to planting, and then we get folks to bring in so many different varieties that we weren't aware of, everything from food to flower. This will be a great opportunity for people to discover new plants to be able to apply to their location.
Yes, it's amazing how much you can grow here that's unique and unusual, because our climate's pretty moderate most of the time, I guess, except February 15th.
Well, everything in moderation, including moderation.
Right.
So yeah, what time does this start?
So, yeah, so I think we meet online at 6 p.m. I think the speaker will be probably 6:30-ish. And we have a little chat about six, share inside stories, new members, events, things like that. It's a really fun way to interact with your fellow gardeners and chat and just have a really good time. We have a good time every month.
And, of course, this is free to anyone who wishes to participate, correct?
Free to anyone. Just go to the link on our website, austinorganicgardeners.org, and click on the link to Zoom in. And we welcome anybody. We love having people. And we've had people all over the world. So it's really fun to be part of a large global organic movement.
Well, Mary, that's outstanding. Now, this will be this Monday, right? And you can get the link to the event at austinorganicgardeners.org. Is that correct?
Yes, and we also have a Facebook page, Austin Organic Gardeners, and a Facebook group as well that you can join.
Outstanding. Well, Mary, I look forward to this. I appreciate you letting us know. And hopefully the folks listening today will take an opportunity to go and check that out.
Okay. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks for the call, Mary. Yeah, folks, you have to understand something. I use this phrase. We garden, many of us garden here with the Ward and June Cleaver version of what should be in the garden. And that is totally outdated for the environment we have here in Texas. There are so many plants that grow here that most of us are never aware of, from foods to herbs to flowers, things that we just have to break out of our own little bubble of what we think is should be in the garden to experience what everybody can put in their garden. So this is a good opportunity to learn something new and maybe find yourself some new plants that you hadn't considered. Let's go to the phone. This is Dina. Good morning, Dina. What can I help you with?
Hi. I put in an irrigation system, and so they kind of tore up the whole yard. Would it be okay to put MicroLife back on the 624 fertilizer to kind of help? I put seed down. We went and put sandy loam on top and then some seed in the areas that were pretty torn up from them putting all the irrigation system in. So I thought maybe if I put that MicroLife on top of it, it might help the seed and the other grass get going better, or no?
No, that's perfectly good idea to do. Just remember, More is not necessarily better. So stick to the recommendations on the product so that you don't overuse it. But no, that would be a good product to help encourage the grass to grow and root faster so they can cover up that area for you and return you to a nice, consistent green turf.
Okay. Another thing, the sprinkler system really, it's, to me, it's sort of like farm-like. It really throws the water way out. So I have a cedar elm right in the middle of the yard, and I've let the lower branches stay, I guess, too low. Is it all right to cut the lower branches off so it can spread the water out better, or is there a problem with cutting? They're not very thick, the branches from the cedar elm. Would it hurt?
No, you can raise the canopy now. This is not a bad time of the year for that tree. And if the canopy is in the way, in other words, the lower branches are hitting you, make it hard to mow, blocking water, it's okay if you would like to trim those up now. If the tree looks good, it should be safe to do now, and that will help ensure the water is everywhere.
Good. And then my last question is the ligustrum, the sunshine ligustrum. Do you know if the deer will attack that? Because I'm out here where tons of deer.
I would never recommend ligustrum. It is an invasive, it's non-native, and deer or not, you could consider a different choice. Dina, sorry, we're at the bottom of the hour for a break. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's go over to the phone. This is Janice. Good morning, Janice. What can I help you with?
Hi, Jeff. We put in a new lawn last year in October. And, of course, the apocalypse got me. I want to talk about seaweed. How much do we put out? And is we put out dry molasses a couple of days ago, and now I want to put out the seaweed. How much do you put out, and is it good?
First off, it's excellent. How often do you use it?
I have never used it.
Right. I'm sorry. That was kind of a rhetorical. How often would you use it? I might use it once a month and on my turf, things like that. I could use it every 2 weeks if I wanted to, but I'm not sure as your grass gets better, as things look better, I don't know that you need to do it that often. So let's say you use it once a month. How much do you use it? Or how much do you use? If I'm using the solution, it's like it's on the label, but I think it's what? 2 ounces
what?
In a gallon of water will cover something like can't remember if it's 500 or 1,000 square feet. So in other words, a little goes a long way. Act like you're painting. You're not trying to soak the ground. You just kind of want to take a hose end sprayer, your pump sprayer, and you want to wet the grass everywhere. The grass, don't have to soak the ground. Now, you can mix it up with water and drench a tree or a shrub or whatever, but the grass is going to take it in through the leaves. So once a month, paint it, use a hose end sprayer, act like you're painting the lawn, and you will see it really become more tolerant of drought, hot weather, cold weather, and really put in that really good root growth for you.
What about if it doesn't have any leaves right now? Those spots that are kind of like almost bare.
What's going to happen is the places that are growing are going to expand to fill in the bare spots. So that's what your goal will be. Places that have grass, make that grass super healthy so it will start to spread and then fill in everything for you. So that you have one nice continuous lawn there. Those bare spots, the goal will be let it grow back in from the areas around it. And that will really help it. Seaweed helps improve root growth by a significant amount so that grass can get back into the bare spots.
What about this sludge stuff you get from the sewer places? That can we spread that? Is that good? Our lawn guy told us to get some of that. Just put a quarter inch over the lawn. Is that even good?
Yes, but you should be fully informed. The sewer sludge, that's exactly what it is. is the point of, it is the waste product from the processing facilities. That by default is not bad. And we got to do something with it. It just can't pile up somewhere. But here's the only thing you should be aware of. It treats all sewage waste there. And part of that problem is industrial facilities are attached to the same wastewater as your home. And we also have hospitals attached to the same wastewater as your home. So some of those products could wind up in that sewage sludge. Is that mean it's a bad, terrible, horrid thing? No. But for you, it's an informed choice to be aware of that. It can be a great product on your turf and around your trees to really punch up the green of your lawn. And he's right. A quarter inch goes a very long ways in making that grass grow. Now, you do have to understand something else. It is not going to have a very nice scent to it. It's going to have kind of an obnoxious odor, but that should go away in a day or two. But yes, you may use that product, just fully understand what it may or may not have in it.
Yeah, I understand. What about, what other compost would you suggest?
You can go to any of the soil yards in the area. They all tend to produce different kinds of compost based on whatever the raw material was that they made it with. Some have turkey, some are just vegetable matter compost, some of them, all kinds of blends. And you could use that compost on your turf also. Same idea, quarter inch thick to half an inch thick, and you're going to pretty much get the same result. The dillo dirt, the waste product, is going to be a little higher in nutrients and may help green up a little faster, but the end result's pretty close regardless of which one you use. And you can get both delivered to your home, whether it's a pickup truck load or a dump truck load, depending on the amount of soil you have to cover. But the local soil yards may have a product for you also, depending on where you're at. And you can also get that, the dillo dirt, and use it, and both are a good option to get that turf to fill back in and be rich and green. Janice, it sounds, yep, sorry, we accidentally dropped you out of there. Folks, I'm right on a break. Gary, I see you there. Can you hang on? Last break of the hour, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Let's head over to the phones. This is Gary. Good morning, Gary. What can I help you with?
Good morning, Jeff. We have in our yard a lot of that horse herb that's starting to take over certain sections of the yard. What do you recommend to control that or to get rid of it besides? Now, we've tried the 20% vinegar, and that helps initially, but then within a month, it's starting to come back up again.
Well, most people, let's address the problem. It is a rooted perennial native wildflower. So like all plants, to defeat the plant, you have to ensure it doesn't have leaves. If it loses its leaves, it cannot make food. It will starve to death. Now, perennial plants in particular, but several plants have the ability to store an incredible amount of food in their root system, and you wiping the leaves out one time is not going to be enough to kill it permanently. So you may have to apply the weed killer, the vinegar stuff, more than once. Maybe every couple of weeks you go out, you look for places where it seems to be coming back, and you give it a squirt. You're also going to have one advantage coming up. Horse herb can survive well in the shade, and it is moderately drought tolerant, but it thrived during all this rain, as you're seeing. So as we get into hot weather and as we start getting less water, it'll be more susceptible to that weed killer, and you'll be able to knock it back easier each time that you use it. Can you get to zero?
Stake.
I really kind of doubt it. Hate to say that to you, but it's a microscopic little seed that can be easily spread, but you can get good control of it.
Okay. Just with the 20% vinegar and just staying on top of it.
Yeah, I would never go more than 2 weeks without making a check to see if you have any. Every time you hurt it and you get a little leaf back, if you hurt it again, you're really hammering it and wearing it out. And that's going to be one of the most effective ways to control it in your turf.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the call, Gary. And I answered Gary's question. I know a lot of people are going, well, wait a minute. It's a great ground cover. It grows better than grass. I encourage mine. I have spots where if it weren't for the horse herb, I would have nothing there growing at all. But I do understand that that's not necessarily the look people want in their turf. A healthy lawn should be able to choke that out. It's just a getting the battle to give the advantage to the lawn. Let's go to the phone. This is Steve. Good morning, Steve. What can I help you with?
Morning. Howdy, howdy, howdy.
Wonderful day.
I have a question. What do you think about mint marigolds for a backdrop?
I really like the plant. I have some that have been in place. I think we've had it there several years. I know it's more than three. And it returned from the freeze-apocalypse. And it returned very nicely. It's an attractive plant that requires very little care. It handles our environment wonderfully. It doesn't get too big, and it's gorgeous when late in the fall it just covers itself with the yellow flowers. It has mint in its name, but it's really not like the invasiveness you get of real mint.
I have some of that. I have to be pulling it out.
Well, so long as you're pulling it out and putting it in things like mojitos and juleps and stuff like
exactly.
that, that's okay.
Well, I also heard that you can actually cut this and you can hang it upside down and dry the leaves off and actually use it for tea.
Well, you can. The Mexican mint marigold has a flavor very similar to tarragon. As a matter of fact, it's a good replacement for tarragon because true French tarragon really doesn't like our environment. The humidity doesn't do well here. But the Mexican mint marigold, with its beautiful flower and being perennial, it does. So you can substitute it for the herb tarragon in a whole host of dishes that you might try. So,
So this is the score.
Yeah. This is a great plant. It's really gorgeous when it's in full bloom. Now, the rest of the year, it's just a well-behaved, nice, pretty little green plant that does great here. But in bloom, everybody loves it.
So when do they bloom?
You'll see blooms showing up probably starting in late July, August time frame, and it may bloom for several months.
Okay. All right, well, you answered my question, and I love your show, and thank you so much for talking to me.
You bet. Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, folks, Mexican mint marigold is an amazing plant. It is a great low-maintenance, pest-free for most purposes, pretty flower that draws in the pollinators, and it's a nice, rich color of green with a bright yellow flower. That's a great plant to add to our landscape. And like I said, I had mine in the ground, I know, for multiple years. Sorry, I can't give you an exact number. And boy, it froze to the ground during the freeze-pocalypse, and it's coming back now. It's back to about, 6 or 8 inches tall. And will look beautiful when it blooms out this fall. So don't discount it. Someone sent me a text, and I want to answer this quickly. What kind of fertilizer do you use for peppers or tomatoes? When the plants are first growing, you want to use a higher nitrogen fertilizer. And when I say higher, I mean less than 10 is the number, with the goal of producing a big, rich, strong canopy and structure. When the plant starts flowering and attempts to produce fruit, I might switch to a fertilizer that has a higher middle number, phosphorus, which is important in the formation of flowers and fruit. So I get it big enough to protect the fruit from the sunshine. We don't get sun scald on the tomatoes or on the peppers. And once it reaches that point, I'm going to feed it so that it'll grow really well and produce lots of fruit and vegetables for me. A dry fertilizer does that really nicely. So does a liquid. So target based on I need growth right now, I'm going to use a little more nitrogen, like fish emulsion. When you get to the part where I need flowers and I want fruit, I'm going to use something where the middle number is a little bigger, more phosphorus, and it should give you a great yield. Folks, this has been Gardening Naturally. It's a great Saturday morning to get out in the garden, which is exactly what I'm going to do. I hope you'll join me. I will talk to you all again tomorrow at 8:00.